Rocky Gutierrez will be leaving the employment of the city and borough of Sitka the 15th of this month. He's officially been acting as a consultant, still occupying the same office and working around the city hall, but Rick Anderson was appointed the new municipal administrator. This interview was conducted with Rocky about a week after he retired as the municipal administrator. It was a chance to talk to him about the good old days of Sitka and how he got here.
It was the fall of 1949.
What were you doing? How'd you hear about the job?
Well, Bill Ward, he was the city supervisor in those days. Shop was right across the street from here, right where the creek used to be. Matter of fact, I was listening to one of Al Brookman's programs there and got me thinking there. He lived right in back of the shop over on Peshaw Street there. Like you said there, they were hard times, but they were fun. And everybody seemed to get along real good. But no, Bill Ward there, he come up and wondered if I want to go to work on the city crew. City crew at that time was comprised of three fellas. Walter Gray, Herb Gray, and myself. That was the city crew.
And what'd you do? Everything?
Everything.
Garbage pickup?
Yeah, we done garbage pickup, sewers, swept the streets when our street sweeper got lost. You name it, we did it. There was three bodies.
Your street sweeper got lost?
Well, every so often, the one we had there at that time, he had a tendency to get lost every so often. The old people know who I'm talking about. I'd rather not mention any names.
Well, what brought you to Sitka?
Got out of the service in 48. It was April 48. I had no intentions of coming to Sitka. Went as far as Seattle with a friend who had been up here. I was still in Europe. He wrote me and said he was waiting for me to get back. So I go to Alaska. I told him, don't wait for me. I can hardly wait to get back to California. So I agreed to go as far as Seattle with him there and run into a guy that had a boat there and wanted to help him bring it up, and I said, not me. Went back to him the next day and wanted to find out how long this trip would take, and he said, about 5 days. As I recall, he gave us $100 and a ticket back. I figured, what the heck, 5 days out of my life, and this was the end of the line. I loved it. So I got off the boat. Met my wife here. And we went down to California, got married, and come back, and been here ever since.
How long were you in Sitka before you got a job?
The first thing I'd done here, I worked out in a logging camp there for, it was about a month there, and this fella, he went belly up. Then I worked over on the construction of the PHS hospital there for Carson Construction. And that was a long winter.
Long winter?
It was a long winter. Nobody was working. In those days there, you probably worked, the average person, maybe 6 months out of the year, 6-7 months, and kind of tended the fire during the winter. Basically a fishing community, some construction.
PHS Hospital's that old, the one that's there now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Looks a lot newer than that.
Well, they've taken care of it there. It's a substantial building.
And so this guy, the Bill Ward, knew mm-hmm. you from working in that construction work?
No, I just met Bill here in town there and talked to him a couple times and what have you. And he offered me the job, and I thought, well, here's a year-round job, so I took it.
The city hall then was the old fire department down on Lincoln Street, right?
Yeah. No, wait a minute. No, because it wasn't upstairs there. The fire department had that. That was... can't really tell you where the city hall was. I think perhaps it operated down the old jail area. Frank Kelvin was the city clerk at that time.
How many other city employees were there?
In the municipal crew, there was Ben Rigling. He was the mechanic. And there was operated with one or two guys in the garbage truck from time to time. They're filling in with the three-man crew that we had. But basically it was about six people. Totally. Poor mechanic had a bad time. He had to run around making parts and scrounging parts, and if something break down, we'd go up the dump and see if there was a part for it.
You were telling me that you're pretty good at scrounging too, trying to find stuff for the city after the military left the island.
Oh yeah, Fred Giesling, he was in charge over there. He he had a full-time job keeping his eyes on us. City was poor. Didn't have much money, what have you. But Fred, he was sitting on a kingdom over there. Yeah, we dug up a lot of the military water lines, sewer lines, what have you, and used them throughout town here. We just went ahead and appropriated there when Fred wasn't looking. I think I told you the story about the time we went over and got the anvil, and we got it almost to the water there, and it wasn't Fred that caught us. I think Ted Harris, who worked for Fred. we had to pack the anvil all the way back over to hangar number 3.
100-pound anvils?
Oh, my gosh, I tell you, they had a hangar over there full of anvils. Grease guns, you name it. Never seen so much stuff in my life.
So you went out and got sewer line and water line from these guys?
Well, we just dug it up there. Matter of fact, Tommy McNulty, who's still in town, he remembers that. We had an old cherry picker. We done everything with it. Where the creek comes down by Ken Brown's apartments, there was three lines in there, sewer water and a salt water line for fire protection. We went back in there with this cherry picker, as much line as we had, and rope and what have you there, and we'd just pull this line out. Then we went back up where Peterson Street is at now and built a little bit of a road down there and went down and got the rest of it there from the other end. That's all the cable we had, so we had to work from both ends.
How's the cable work? Do you tie it off in the pipe and just pull on the cable and pull it up? Or?
No, we do there is take as much cable as we had on the drum, on this cherry picker. What we call a cherry picker was a Ford with a winch on the back of the power takeoff. And we take rope as far as we could there and uncover the pipe and pull it out. Yeah, matter of fact, a lot of that pipe has been redug up since that time. Some of it's still in use. Put in there 30 years ago. We didn't have any backhoes or whatever. Your backhoe, you dug it.
And the stuff's made of that old wooden stave pipe and wrapped with wire.
Mm-hmm.
That pretty fragile when you pull it out?
No, it was a good pipe and what have you. The only problem we had here is the pipe itself, there was no problem. The bands on it, you got the electrolysis.
Well, what did the town look like?
What does it look like? What did it look like?
Yeah. I understand that, you know, where the Chevron station is in Sciatica was all kind of a marshy creek area.
No, the, that was, let's see where Sciatica is at right now. That was around Ariana, Henry? Yeah, Henry Ariana had that place there. And then across the street, Webb Burns had the old Erler Hotel, bicycle service, sold stoves. And then the Russian Tea House that's up at the out the ferry terminal, that was right across the street there. On the corner, Bart lived there. Joe Beale had quite a garden along the... It wasn't really marshy, matter of fact. That was some of the better ground in town.
Oh, I thought this was an urban development. Or...
It was urban renewal, but the ground itself wasn't bad there. Some of the old structures just age. They were substantial houses, the people lived in them. But right on the corner there where the Chevron is at now, that was Columbia Lumber. That's where was their retail store.
How did the road, you know, Halibut Point Road take its tack now, or was there...
You come up, there was two streets right here in front of the city hall. You had Pescher off on one side and Lake on the other, divided by the creek out of Swan Lake. Mm-hmm. And there's a little wooden bridge across what is now the intersection of Sawmill Creek and Pescher off on Lake Street.
And Crescent Harbor, somebody told me it used to be an old beach.
It was a beach. Yeah, it was strictly, I don't know, you know, it's a matter of... who you talk to there. Some people think it would look better in those days there. I don't happen to agree. I think that boat harbor down there is probably one of the nicest things that ever happened. Then the boat harbor went ahead there and created those tidelands you see in back the downtown area. Somebody that hasn't been here, you know, for some good many years, they would come in here and they wouldn't believe it.
Must have taken an awful lot of fill. That's basically from the back end of Lincoln Street all the way out to the bridge.
Yeah, we've done there is... we bought Columbia Lumber. As I recall, I think it was about $150,000. And we parlayed that into what you see down there now. The Corps of Engineers, when we went to build the boat harbor, they were responsible for locating a sewer that came out on the tidelands there in front of what was Jack Conway's house, Dog Creek there. And... went to see Colonel Farley with the Corps of Engineers and asked him if we relocated that sewer at municipal expense, if he would designate all the reclaimed tidelands there as disposal areas. So he does some checking. He said, well, he figures a checkout by the same. We can designate the, might be a little additional. Anyway, it worked out there. So we went down to Housing Urban Development in Seattle. And as I recall, it was about $150,000 there also. We obtained a loan from them. So we went ahead and intercepted the sewer lines, pulled those all around, and took it out by where the Centennial Building is now. We laid all those lines prior to the dredge taking place. So it was a trade-off. We relocated the sewer line there, and the Corps of Engineers, you might say, went ahead and created about 16 acres of land for us.
What do you mean by disposal area, and where did you get the material?
The material came out of the Crescent Boat Harbor.
Oh, so all of that?
That whole area there, where the Centennial Building sits and what have you. Matter of fact, where the Centennial Building sits right now there, in a little closer, that was where the Columbia Lumber used to load their barges out. There was an area in there. They had a stiff leg there, and they'd load off onto barges and then take them out to ships in the channel, and sometimes there they'd pull up to the westward.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, one of these days somebody's going to be digging around that parking lot, and they're going to come across a real archaeological find. There's a building down there, which is the powerhouse. And we knocked that down. It's reinforced concrete. We knocked it down, as I recall, about elevation 15. So that's still there. We just went ahead there. But some days.
Where the gas station is?
Pardon?
Where the gas station is?
No, that would be probably across the street from in the parking lot area. We have maps here that identify the place, but.
Where the Centennial Building parking lot, you mean?
The Crescent Harbor parking lot.
Oh, I see.
Right in that area, there's a. I'd say the building was probably about, 40 by 60.
Wow.
Reinforced concrete, but it's still there. Somebody will find it one of these days when they get to dig and wonder what it was.
What other things were dramatically changed here? Of course, the bridge was more modern than
the bridge,
in those days.
To give Johnny O'Connell a lot of credit on that one there, we went ahead and filled those tidelands there and dedicated a road and... They were dredging the pore surface basins, so we made a deal with a contractor to put a little material over on the other side there, and all of a sudden you found a road with something missing. There was nothing to connect it, so that was our big push then to get those things two tied together.
That seemed to be Sitka's plan. You know, they kind of do everything they can locally and then just kind of go, let's see what we can get the state and everybody else to do.
Oh, I think there's a lot of citizen involvement here in town. Matter of fact, I think they're the best planners in the world. They'll let you know when something isn't going to their liking, and there's nothing wrong with that. We can color all the maps we want up here, but if the people don't like it, it doesn't mean anything. There's been some controversies over the year and what have you, but I think, any time we've set our mind to do something there, try to get the community behind you, and there's no holding us back. We can do just about anything, especially when somebody tells you can't be done. That's the challenge.
Well, the bridge must have been that. That was all built, before the big pipeline days. Built
yeah.
with largely state money, too, isn't it?
A lot of federal funds in there, probably about 90% Fed.
Hmm.
Federal Highway Assistance Fund funding. Yeah, the first, I think I told you, the first design they sent us over there, we asked them if the Great Northern was getting rid of a trestle. It looked like hell. We didn't want that in Sitka. Anyway, they come back with the design right now, which I think certainly complements Sitka, and aesthetically, why I can't see anybody have any complaint on it.
Why does Sitka have a bridge and Ketchikan doesn't, and some of these other communities don't have a bridge out to the...
Well, I think we identified a need and zeroed it on. I think historically, again, there, Sitka does not go out and ask for 10, 15 things at once. Well, we got a priority. We try to limit to maybe two or three items, which we zero in on those. You tend to... You're working against yourself when you go out and ask for 10, 15 things.
How much did the bridge cost?
About $3 million total.
Jeez, you couldn't even get the engineering done for nowadays for that
much.
No.
That was the steel. It's beautiful.
The old city hall, that was torn down about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I guess.
That building had a lot of stuff going on in it. You were telling me at one time about all the concrete that got poured into the driveway.
In the station itself, when it was built there, you were talking about, matter of fact, something like that fire engine that's over there at the fire hall now, you weren't talking about the type of engines we've got, so you take a engine in there fully loaded and what have you, and we lost about 3 or 4 floors. Matter of fact, the contractor, when he went to demolish the building, he had a little problem with those floors. I personally worked on two of the floors.
You mean that the truck would go in there and the floor would sink?
Just settle down. So, you know, there wasn't a heck of a lot we could do about it. They're short of taking everything out there. And then, just notice all the piling they drove for the bank. There was no piling underneath that building. When that one was built, why, they just poured a foundation. That was it. Later, we went to... We got a grant, and we done some work on the city hall there, and we put this vault in upstairs. And as I recall there, that guy was digging down about 15 feet before we ever found anything to put the pilaster in to hold the vault. So you can see there the building was sitting on nothing. I often said there, if there was an earthquake in that building, the only thing that would stand would be this vault up in the air by itself.
When did the city abandon that? When I first got to town, it was only a little over 2 years ago, there was a Yukon Office Supply had the bottom floor, and now it's the First National Bank of Anchorage.
John, I can't tie it down, but that plaque out there in front on this building would be the indicator. Okay. I'd say 10 years, thereabouts. Yeah, about 10 years.
Huh. Now, the thing that everybody wanted me to ask you about was Lot 4. I guess this piece of property is pretty infamous. Where is it?
That's next to the community college there where we have the diesel sheds and what have you. The road there next to the Lonesome Pete or the 3.5, whatever it is.
Oh, okay.
We always had our eye on it there. Good source for a rock there for the boat harbor and development that happened to be tied up in mental health status. And Sterling, Sterling Gallagher, he was a member of that mental health board there looking after the property and what have you. Anyway, he finally told the state that we'd swap them 4 blocks up near the landfill. And after a lot of haranguing, what happened, well, we finally were successful in obtaining a lot for.
What's mental health status?
Well, in those days, their property had been set aside there to fund mental health under the statehood. They set aside so much property. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, there's a lawsuit right now at this point on this that was filed on behalf of mental health that the state gave the properties away and what have you. But Sitka, the whole road system was... All the properties contiguous to the road system were mental health designation.
Huh.
So, you know, we were pretty well landlocked in, so we zeroed in on that. And we were able to obtain that. I originally started with, I think it's lots 1 and 3 up there near Indian River. We obtained those from the state. We kept moving on down and decided we wanted lot 4, so we traded the 4 blocks.
How big is lot 4?
Well, lot 4, I think, was probably about 40, 50 acres, thereabouts.
Mainly rock?
Rock, right. Good material source there for projects here in town. I think ultimately you're going to see some development on it. It's a good piece of property.
The city still owns it?
Well, we got rid of it a couple of times in various other property exchanges with the state there, and we always wound up owning it there. We traded them, how in the heck was that? We traded them the 4 blocks up there, which they still own, for lot 4. Then we traded lot 4 for the bench land. Yeah, that's the way that one went. And then we got lot 4 back again. I forget what exchange that was at. And we traded something off again. I forget exactly what the heck that was. But anyway, the state had lot 4 again there, and under our municipal selections, we went ahead and got lot 4 back again. So we still own it. Matter of fact, I was talking to Ron Schoenenbeck and Andy Pekovich. They were needling me here the other day about that.
From the state?
Yeah, it says you're doing the same damn thing with that the bench land now, parlaying it there. But we started with that exchange there. Like I say, those 4 blocks up there, the Muskeg there, got lot 4, parlayed that into the bench land there, and then wound up with lot 4 and also Goddard. So that's it's been a lot of fun. We worked some good people over in Juneau.
When I moved to Sitka, I was checking out the place and asked friends of mine that were in Juneau at the time about the city manager here. They said that you were a real hard negotiator and that you had a reputation for making sure Sitka got what it needed. How'd you learn to do that? I mean, I know you worked in the public works crew, but where'd you get the skills to do this?
I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. As far as I'm concerned, the people in Sitka educated paid me for my education. I don't know. I've always found that deal with people, you know, unfair, be right up front with them, what have you there, that they'll be the same with you. I've got no problems whatsoever with the state administration there. I think that regardless of the administration or politics involved in it there, that your employees over there are all basically honest people, whatever, they'll do anything they can to help you. We always try to deal there with the number three, number four man, keep in contact with him. And when the administration changes, why the new commissioner will ask you, well, what kind of guys are they over there? And you go, you want those people in place to say you're okay. Mm-hmm. We don't cudgel too much to the commissioners because they say they tend to change. But we've got some real good friends over there, very good friends.
How'd you get to be the public works director? Just hanging around long enough?
I guess so. You know, there was nobody else to do the job. I guess that's what it was there. I took that job there on a temporary basis there. I was still working on the outside crew, half day. Anyway, about a year and a half later, I asked him, when are you going to find somebody? I said, I enjoyed working on the outside crew. The crew was a little bit bigger at those days. And then, Shinnett was mayor then, Earl Shinnett. He asked me if I'd take it, and I really wasn't interested. And one thing led to another, and anyway, I took the job. Worked in that there, and I guess really because the only reason is because I knew more history than anybody in Sitka.
Where all this water lines were.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And then you worked as a half-time public works, half-time city administrator?
Yeah, that job was pretty well done. It was growing, there's no doubt about that there.
When was this?
I would say probably about 59, 60, thereabouts.
Mm-hmm. What was an administrative assistant doing then?
It's basically the same job you had here, except that you had no manager form of government. So you carried out the day-to-day wishes of the former council at that time.
Do you think unification was a good move?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The problem that you get into on that there, John, is that there's a lot of politics being played at the expense of the taxpayer. I see it going on. Ketchikan is a fine example. Basically, it's the same type of community as Sitka. You know, you've got the city, which is the core, and you got a borough road system going out both areas. What affects the people in downtown Ketchikan certainly is of interest to the people out in the road system. But the planning and whatever takes place there, matter of fact, to some degree, we're caught up in it right now. Here we built Indian River and what have you there, thinking that was going to be our water source. I'd say, you know, under the circumstances there, what's happened there, we probably still would have gone with what we'd done there. But we should have been planning area-wide. And the planning function was there on an area-wide basis there, but not the utility. They had the borough did not have the utility functions.
So borough did planning and the city did the utilities?
Did the utilities. So
the city only wanted water for itself.
Well, that's all, you see. But we went ahead there and we run a water line out, say, from Indian River in a 24-inch. If we'd said, hey, we're going out both road systems, the possibility would have been to say, hey, we need a 36-inch, or we'll go ahead and size this line accordingly so we can bring water from that area in. But that's what I'm saying. You're redoing some of the things that have been done, you know, within the past 20 years. And the people are the ones that pay for it.
What would you say is your big accomplishment?
What is it?
Yeah. What single thing would you say you've done, or a couple of things you say you've done for Sitka?
You know, I'd say my family. My biggest accomplishment.
Tell me about them.
Hmm? Well, I tell you, I can't thank them enough for putting up with me all these years.
Well, you have, let's see, you've got one daughter and a son, right?
Yeah, Laura's at the U of A, and, well, I've got four daughters and a son. And I've got four daughters and a son. They range from 35 down to 14. Yeah, Dorothy, who's here in town. And I've got Chris, her family. Then Roxanne, she's in Whidbey Island. And Laura is still at home there. She's attending the U of A, and I'm Mike. But, you know, when things aren't going right and what have you around here and this and that, they're the ones that take the full brunt of it there. And I'll say thank God there for putting up with me. I'm real fortunate on that one. But, you know, as far as any single thing here with the municipality there, it's just been a combination of things. I think one thing that we've got to start doing, too, though, is... It's always been my philosophy, and I'm sure Rick will carry it out, and I just hope future assemblies, instead of looking as to what's going to happen tomorrow or next year, that what's going to happen 30, 40, 50 years from today. I think Sitka deserves it.
Well, one of the things that other people told me about you when I moved down here was that that you would never leave Sitka. Is that true?
Mm-mm.
And they also say that is the reason why
Sitka is such a good place to live is because you were managing it with the idea that you're going to live here 30 years from now.
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope I'll be here 30 years from now. But no, I think that's what you've got to be thinking. You know, I think it's all up to each one of us here to leave the place just a little bit better than you found it. It's been a good place to me. The people, I've never found better people. And I don't think that I could have worked for better councils or assemblies. I don't see where it's any different than any family here in town. It's a matter of setting your priorities. You know, you sit down, you discuss things with the family. We need a new Davenport, new refrigerator, and all these things here. Well, I don't notice the average family going out and buying everything at once. Again, you know, government, been my philosophy there, let it get away from me and never get it back. It's an interesting note there that Anchorage, they passed a Proposition 13 question. You have the same thing going on over in Fairbanks right now, which they're fighting, hoping it doesn't go through there. Juneau was looking at there. Matter of fact, I got a question here from a private citizen there doing an evaluation on taxes. There's been some complaints down in Ketchikan. People tell me, you know, that taxes are too cheap. I consider any tax you pay to be too much. Show me where you want for anything here in this community. I think basically we've got everything that everybody, perhaps not on the, you know, on the largest scale, but I think that people have got to learn to do for themselves. Don't turn around to government. I'd be the first one to tell you you're probably the most inefficient animal there is. Sometimes I wonder why I'm in government. But I don't think it's a case of being cheap. I think I've managed to take care of the municipality's finances a lot better than my own. I just haven't had the time. But no, I don't consider it cheap. Like I say, show me the needs and what have you that you've got here. Again, there, I think, you know, when you get right down to it, we should be the envy of Southeast Alaska. You've got all the basic infrastructures here. Everything is new. You have a water source that'll serve you, you know, from long after we're gone. The electric situation, depending on what happens on Sitka here, we're in good shape. Power rates in Sitka here, you know, even though some people say they're too high, they're the cheapest in Southeast Alaska, with the exception of the Snettisham project in Juneau. And that will continue to go up because they have to have 100% reliability there in diesel. So you've got to pay for that, too. That's an insurance policy. We don't have 100% reserve here.
Why does Juneau have to have 100% reserve?
Because of the weakness in the Snettisham line.
Oh, they've got all that snow come down.
Well, they keep losing the thing. Again, you know, this outage that we took here, I think we've been quite fortunate. Go back a few years or talk to some of the people here. We had a power outage here about once a week. I think things are, I think they're in good shape. I've heard a lot of criticism about this permanent fund and what have you. There's some people say, you know, you're trying to lock up the money and what have you. No, I'm not trying to lock it up there. But, you know, by the same token there, I think that the electorate should have something to say what you do with that money as it is right now. There, I mean, as it was, why any four assembly people could sit down and, you know, say, hey, we're going to build this here and not ask the electorate because it's current revenues. They had the authority to do it there. Not only would the person have not had a say in that, they wouldn't even, you know, once you build a facility, then you got the recurring M&O cost. The electorate would have no say in that. No, we haven't locked up a doggone thing. It's still up to the people. And again, there, you know, I don't consider it's something that's not going to come to pass again. Not unless they find a couple more Prudos or what have you. So I think we've got to start thinking about tomorrow's generations, what have you. I've got some kids there, and there's a lot of kids growing up in this town and what have you. Let's leave something for them.
An old saying about city managers or managers in general that when the guy leaves and comes in, a new guy comes into the job, he finds three envelopes, and the old guy says, well, the first thing you do when you have a crisis is open an envelope. He opens up the first envelope, and it says, blame it on your predecessor. So the guy does that, and it worked. And he opens up the second envelope and says, fire all the staff. He does that, and it worked. He's okay, so got a job. But then he comes to the third crisis. He opens up the third envelope, and it says, prepare three envelopes.
Well,
what advice would you give to somebody taking your job, Rick or anybody else?
Oh, I think we'll have different management styles. I don't think any of us are the same, you know. And I'd say that's good. We certainly don't want to be clones there. I think Rick will give it his best shot. I certainly don't want to tell him if he asked me for advice. You know, it was Monday morning quarterbacking. I don't think I'll be in a position to do that. I won't know what's going on a day-to-day basis. His decisions will be his, and the assembly is the one that gives you the marching orders. They're the administrative, and you got your legislative and the administrative side. And I've been fortunate over the years. They stay on their side of the line, I stay on mine. But no, I would hope there that, whoever they get in, I think that's one of the big differences here in Sitka there is my philosophy is that I'm going to live here from here on out. Mm-hmm. So I'm certainly vitally interested in any decision that's made in the community. I'm thinking long term. And I think that's one of the problems you have with, managers have been referred to as tramps. They move from one town to the other there, and certainly they come and they do a good job and what have you. It always looks good on the resume, too, for the next place there, that I've done this, I accomplished this and that there. But unfortunately there, the municipalities don't come back and say, hey, what was the bonded indebtedness when he come and what was it when he left? What can people afford?
Anything you'd like to add?
No, but all I can add there is been my privilege to work for the people of Sitka here, and I thank all the assemblies and councils and what have you for the trust they put in me, and I certainly hope I haven't violated in any way. That's about all I've got to say.
Rocky Gutierrez, former municipal administrator for the city and borough of Sitka. And for Southeast Northwest, I'm John Newstrom.